It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. Congress crafting yet another coronavirus relief bill, but this one facing an uncertain future on Capitol Hill. Correspondent Bill Rakoff begins our coverage.
House Democrats led by Speaker Nancy Pelosi are proposing a $3 trillion spending plan that includes more than $800 billion for state and local governments, $75 billion for mortgage assistance and other housing issues, and $100 billion for low-income renters.
There are those who said, let's just pause. Both the families who are suffering know that hunger doesn't take a pause, the rent doesn't take a pause, the bills don't take a pause.
The bill is expected to pass the House on Friday.
That's Bill Rakoff reporting. Republicans already turning their noses up at it. Louisiana Senator John Kennedy.
It's dead as fried chicken in the Senate. It's dead as fried chicken with the American people once they find out what's in it.
What's not in it is liability protection from a slew of lawsuits expected to hit businesses once they reopen. That is something that Republicans are insisting on. The nation's top infectious disease expert says it is entirely possible that a second wave of coronavirus will strike this fall, but he thinks the country will be much more prepared to deal with it if that happens. Dr. Anthony Fauci does not think, however, that schools will be ready to reopen in the fall.
The idea of having treatments available or a vaccine to facilitate the reentry of students into the fall term would be something that would be a bit of a bridge too far.
Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, who happens to be a licensed physician, thinks it would be a huge mistake to keep schools closed.
Really, outside of New England, we've had a relatively benign course for this virus nationwide. And I think the one-size-fits-all that we're going to have a national strategy and nobody's going to go to school is kind of ridiculous. We really ought to be doing it school district by school district.
There are 5,000 college campuses across this country wondering what's going to happen with their 20 million enrolled students, 100,000 public schools wondering the same thing with their 50 million students this fall. California is taking a giant step toward reopening, but not all of California. L.A. County, home to some 10 million people, could remain shut down until mid-August. Governor Gavin Newsom says in other parts of the state, folks can get back to business soon if they follow strict guidelines.
One of the biggest mistakes we can make as we start to move into a reopening phase is somehow overpromise what it means. None of this means anything if customers don't feel safe. And none of this matters if employees don't feel safe and don't want to come back to work.
California is home to the largest public university system in the country, and it will not be open at all this fall. Cal State has 500,000 students on 23 campuses, and it will remain shut down until next year. All of the students will be doing their learning online. Well, the lights of Broadway will be dim for the rest of spring and summer. Sad to say, the Great White Way is shut down through Labor Day. Theaters will be offering refunds for the roughly 2 million tickets purchased for shows through early September. While much of the focus surrounding coronavirus is on the big cities, new research suggests a shift in the outbreak from major coastal communities to America's heartland. An unpublished report from President Trump's coronavirus task force shows the top 10 areas of new infections are in the Midwest and the South. Still, presidential spokesman Jared Kushner defends the decision to reopen these areas.
There's risk to anything, but you know, the president, you know, carries the burden of the 30 million Americans who have lost their jobs due to this. due to this historic effort to save lives.
By this weekend, all but three states in these United States will be reopened in some form or another, no longer held captive by coronavirus. Twitter may be leading the way in the post-pandemic office place.
Twitter has become the first major tech company to tell its employees that they can continue to work from home essentially forever. CEO Jack Dorsey emailing employees that even when the coronavirus lockdown ends, they won't have to come into the office ever again.
That's correspondent Matt Piper. We could learn soon who within the Obama administration was involved in the unmasking of Army General Michael Flynn. President Trump's former national security advisor was outed sometime between Election Day 2016 and Inauguration Day 2017.
The Obama administration intentionally unmasked a conversation with the incoming national security advisor to President Trump. That is stunning.
South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
I find it unbelievable that the outgoing administration is surveilling the incoming administration.
Meanwhile, a federal judge is delaying the decision not to prosecute General Flynn, who pled guilty to lying to the FBI about Russia. The Justice Department dropped the case after documents revealed that senior FBI officials tried to entrap Flynn in order to justify their Russia story. Forecasters are predicting the first tropical storm of the season could hit Florida this weekend. If it gets a name, it will be Tropical Storm Arthur. The National Hurricane Center says there's a 50% chance a storm could develop in the next 5 days, which would be weeks before the official start of the Atlantic hurricane season. Bigamy is no longer a felony in the state of Utah.
It used to be that having multiple wives would land you behind bars for 5 years in the Beehive State. Now, the governor has signed a law that decriminalizes bigamy to just a misdemeanor. Mormons have been practicing bigamy in Utah since before it was a state. Supporters of the new law say reducing the penalty removes barriers that have prevented abuse victims from coming forward. Opponents argue the law normalizes deviant behavior, which they say is responsible for many serious human rights violations. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
All right, Brandon, thank you for that. Major League Baseball still negotiating with the players about a shortened 82-game season starting the July 4th weekend. Former New York Yankee slugger Mark Teixeira says the players don't like the arrangement, but he thinks it's better than nothing.
So any other year, I'd be on the player's side. I would say, yes, don't back down, guys. But this year is different, and I think we have an opportunity as an industry to come together and understand that sacrifices are being made all around the nation, all around the world because of this pandemic.
The new league format would keep teams from traveling as much as possible, and the postseason would be expanded to include four more teams. The players would have to play, though, in empty stadiums. No fans allowed, not this year. Still to come on the Noon Report for a Wednesday. Pennsylvania's health secretary is under the gun. We'll tell you why. Governor Cuomo wants $61 billion, and the Southern Tier teacher who's turning to social media to connect with her kids.
This is meteorologist Ken McKinley. Plenty of sunshine in all areas through this afternoon, with temperatures pretty well up in the 50s, a very pleasant change from what we've had over the past several days. Full forecast details for the rest of the week coming up in about 10 minutes.
All right, Ken, thank you for that. Checking the stories making news where you live across New York and Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania House Speaker Mike Terzai has introduced a bill to slow the spread of COVID-19 through nursing homes in the Commonwealth. This as outrage grows over the virus's infiltration of residential care facilities. The state's health secretary, Dr. Rachel Levine, says two-thirds of Pennsylvania's nearly 4,000 coronavirus deaths have happened in nursing homes.
We need to all work together to do our best to protect these vulnerable people in these facilities.
The Commonwealth's top doc says the state will test everybody at nursing homes from now on, and the National Guard will be assisting in the testing effort.
By testing every resident and every staff member in every nursing home, we will be able to pinpoint exactly who has COVID-19 to prevent further spread.
Dr. Levine moved her own mom out of a nursing home back in March, knowing full well the impact this virus was having on those facilities, and that has a lot of people talking today. Pennsylvania's Attorney General Josh Shapiro has opened up a criminal probe into allegations of neglect and abuse at nursing homes.
My office's neglect team has begun investigations into several Pennsylvania nursing homes who have reportedly failed to properly provide care. My office will not tolerate those who mistreat our seniors and break the law.
Shapiro would not say how many nursing homes are being investigated, nor would he reveal the names of those facilities. He would also not say if the health secretary is at all being investigated. The state health department back in March ordered nursing homes to admit patients even if they tested positive for COVID-19. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is warning of dramatic cuts if New York State does not get more federal help in its fight against coronavirus. Scott Pringle has that story.
Cuomo predicts that schools, hospitals, and local governments will see a 20% drop in state aid if the federal government does not get New York $61 billion.
You know who local governments are? That's police, firefighters.
Cuomo says this as Congress mulls over a $3 trillion stimulus package that Senate Republicans do not appear to be on board with. New York is seeing a huge drop in sales tax revenue combined with a huge cost for dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. Scott Pringle, New York.
The governor says 100 cases of a rare inflammatory illness that affects children have showed up in New York. The illness might be linked to COVID-19.
It's an inflammation of the blood vessels and can affect the heart. We've lost 3 children, 5-year-old boy, a 7-year-old boy, an 18-year-old girl.
The children impacted are predominantly between the ages of 5 and 14.
If we have this issue in New York, it's probably in other states, and probably hasn't been diagnosed yet in other states. Because, again, these children don't present the usual COVID symptoms. They're not respiratory symptoms.
A 9-year-old boy from Hornell, New York, nearly died from the mystery illness. His mother, Amber Dean, says Bobby Dean fell ill after a mild bout of coronavirus, and they had to rush him to the hospital.
They said that had I waited another 24, 48 hours to get him there, we probably would have lost him.
Pretty scary stuff there. The boy's symptoms started with a tummy ache, but quickly went downhill from there. At first, doctors thought he had appendicitis. The boy developed a fever and became severely dehydrated. Eventually, he recovered, though, after about a week in the hospital. A Pennsylvania man has been arrested and accused of threatening Governor Tom Wolf. Rocco Naples of Westmoreland County allegedly said that he and his friends had a bullet waiting for the governor if businesses did not reopen. York County District Attorney Dave Sunday.
Threatening violence, attempting violence, or committing violence is not only against these constitutional principles and the laws of the Commonwealth, but reprehensible, criminal, and will be fully prosecuted by this office.
The accused apparently was upset that businesses across the Commonwealth were closed, but the governor's business, Wolf Home Products in York, was still operational. Naples is accused of calling that company's customer service center and leaving a threatening message. Republican State Senator Scott Martin says Governor Wolf has fanned the flames of hatred in his state by calling those who want to reopen early cowards.
The threatening and the name calling after the county started to push back a little was really uncalled for. You know, the problem is from the very get-go, local officials have been begging for transparency in this.
An alliance of business owners in Pennsylvania has now filed a federal lawsuit claiming the governor's orders are unconstitutional and ineffective. Governor Wolf has shut down the Office of Open Records as critics question why certain businesses are allowed to operate while others are not. The Buffalo, New York Police Department on the receiving end of a little TLC today. Check this out. A faith-based group called Operation Overwatch has packed hundreds of care packages for Queen City police officers. And they include gift cards, small flashlights, hand sanitizers, and a Bible. More than 500 of these care packages will be distributed throughout Buffalo. Rest stops throughout the New York State Thruway are getting upgraded, and you don't have to pay a dime for it. Family Life's Tracy Lynn has the details.
Yeah, the Thruway Board of Directors voting yes to allow all 27 service plazas along the 570-mile superhighway to be enhanced in the coming years and at no cost to toll payers. Under a 33-year deal, the private group called Empire State Thruway Partners will fund the work in exchange for operating restaurants and shops at the service centers. The first phase of construction is slated to start next year. Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
Thank you, Tracy. A Southern Tier teacher is using her spare time at home these days, making educational and entertaining videos to share with her kids.
Hey, Bestel Hills families. Happy May Day.
That is Kathy Willis, and her creativity apparently knows no bounds. She does everything from dressing up like the Mona Lisa to performing magic tricks with her dog.
I act like a fool. And I love it.
And her students love it, too.
One of my favorite videos was when Mrs. Willis and Mrs. Wendell dressed up as Batman and Robin.
The parents are also appreciative of the teacher's antics.
When we see teachers reaching out in a very different way like this, it's not just academic, but it's something that's giving the kids hope.
Willis says it's all in a day's work.
If I can make them laugh, or I can make the parents laugh and maybe break the tension, then I feel like my job is done.
Keep those teachers in your prayers, folks. They are missing the kiddos big time. That's Kathy Willis, a speech pathologist at Vestal Hills Elementary School near Binghamton. Still to come on the Noon Report, Fauci's bridge too far. Is that a bridge too far? We'll ask a local congressman. Don't call it the new normal. And advice for giving haircuts in the COVID-19 era.
What happens to a group of teenage boys that get lost on an island by themselves for over a year? Despite what you might have read, it's not always Lord of the Flies. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. In 1965, a group of, quote, bored, witless Catholic boarding school boys on the South Pacific island of Tonga, aged 13 to 16, decided to borrow a boat and escape to Fiji, over 500 miles away, and maybe even to New Zealand. As any parent of any teenage boy can tell you, their plans aren't always fully thought through. Such was the case with these boys. They set sail without a map or a compass. They were caught in a storm, drifted at sea for 8 days before landing on an uninhabited island, where they ended up staying, lost, and thought dead for 15 months before they were found. Now, if this story reminds you of William Golding's novel Lord of the Flies, in which a group of stranded boys quickly descend into debauchery and violence, well, in this case, life did not imitate art. As Dutch historian Rutger Bregman recounted in an article in The Guardian last week, these Tongan boys turned this uninhabitable island into a functioning and decent community, complete with food production, workout facilities, a permanent fire, and religious services, all of which was constructed using, as he put it, quote, an old knife blade and much determination. Even more impressive than the physical infrastructure they built was the social stability. As Bregman put it, these kids agreed to work in teams of two, drawing up a strict roster for the garden, kitchen, and guard duty. Now, how did these boys so thoroughly confound expectations? In the article, Bregman seems to suggest that fruitful cooperation comes naturally to most people. Instead of Goldman's dark assumptions about human nature in Lord of the Flies, we should instead, he wrote, always look for what is good and positive in people and then expect to find it. Unfortunately, Bregman's interpretation of these events has two big problems. First, he assumes that these boys from Tonga are the rule and not the exception, which, given the sheer number of counterexamples from the daily news, is well a stretch. Second, even though Bregman does note that the boys began and ended each day with song and prayer and attended a strict Catholic school, he seems to miss the obvious connection between their formation and their behavior. Instead, he adopts a form of the noble savage thesis, as if how these boys behaved resulted from their inherent nature, not their schooling. Did all that come from inside, or was it put there? Look, I'm convinced the best opening line in history is by C.S. Lewis in The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. There was a boy called Eustace Clarence Scrub, and he almost deserved it.
In Selfish, Snotty-Nosed Eustace, Lewis personifies just how malforming and narcissistic in both habit and pedagogy education can be. Lewis fully articulated his complaints about modern education in the essay The Abolition of Man, which might have the best closing line in history. We make men without chest and expect of them virtue and enterprise. We laugh at honor and are shocked to find traitors in our midst. We castrate and bid the geldings be fruitful. Underneath the story of these real-life boys from Tonga is the fact that they were formed at their boarding school and likely elsewhere too by a Christian faith and worldview. The Catholic school boys from Tonga weren't angels, but their religious background had shaped them in profound ways. They found ways to cooperate when times were tough because they had been given resources to recognize and govern their own fallen natures. Without these resources, humans quickly devolve into our own devices. It's either Eustace or Lord of the Flies. To miss the connection between faith and virtue is an oversight almost as big as setting off in a stolen boat without a map or a compass. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
All right, pretty nice out there today. Ken McKinley has the forecast.
Good afternoon. What a difference a day makes. We'll see plenty of sunshine as we move through this afternoon. Temperatures significantly warmer than they were 24 hours ago. We'll have clear skies this evening, but clouds will begin to move in from the west later tonight, and that process will continue tomorrow with some rain possible. The temperatures, though, will continue to turn warmer tomorrow. On Friday, a bit unsettled, some showers and some thundershowers. Some areas will see a bit of sun, especially the southern tier in Pennsylvania, and temperatures will continue to turn warmer with some spots on Friday, perhaps reaching or even exceeding the 70-degree mark.
Won't that be nice? Thank you, Ken. This is the Noon Report. It is Wednesday, and here's what's going on this 13th day of May already. America's top disease expert says it is a bridge too far to think schools will open in the fall. Dr. Anthony Fauci thinks opening up school would be unwise if there is not a vaccine for coronavirus. New York Congressman Tom Reed.
He's looking at it from his perspective, which is only from the public health perspective. And so I think he is obviously trying to mitigate the risk to zero. And you just cannot mitigate the risk to zero. And people know that common sense prevails. You got to mitigate the risk as much as you can. And to rule out or to say that schools will not be open next year is, to me, a bridge too far.
Kentucky Senator and licensed medical doctor Rand Paul agrees.
If we keep kids out of school for another year, what's going to happen is the poor and underprivileged kids who don't have a parent that's able to teach them at home are not going to learn for a full year. I think it's a huge mistake if we don't open the schools in the fall.
Dr. Paul told Dr. Fauci at a Senate hearing yesterday, today, you are not the end-all authority on this virus. Dr. Fauci warned lawmakers that it is entirely possible that a second wave of COVID-19 will strike in the fall. President Trump visits Pennsylvania tomorrow. He'll tour a distribution center in suburban Allentown. That facility makes personal protective equipment in the fight against this pandemic. It is Mr. Trump's second visit to the battleground state this year. Despite declining coronavirus numbers in New York, Governor Cuomo still wants you to wear a mask in public as the Empire State emerges from COVID-19.
I can do anything I want with myself. This is America. But I respect you. And out of respect for you, I wear this mask.
Cuomo says putting on a mask shows you care about essential workers.
I respect the nurses and the doctors. So I'm not going to infect anyone or allow anyone else to be infected unnecessarily, so I don't cause more stress on the nurses and the doctors.
Three regions of the state, including the Southern Tier and Finger Lakes region, have gotten the green light to unpause on Friday. The Democratic National Committee is making plans for a virtual party convention this summer in Milwaukee.
The plan is to still hold some kind of in-person event, unclear how big, in Milwaukee, the host city, but it won't necessarily be that sort of arena show that we've come so accustomed to watching over the last 40 to 50 years.
That's political reporter Ed O'Keefe. Now, Republicans have yet to release what their plans are for their convention, which happens in Charlotte a week after the Democrats' convention. A high school principal in the state of Texas went the extra mile, you could say, when coronavirus closed his school. He got behind the wheel and went looking for members of his senior class. Maria Villarreal has the story.
Good morning, everyone.
When Principal Verdi Montgomery was forced to close Wiley High School's doors, he knew he had to find a way to stay connected.
They can't come to me.
I'll just go to them.
Did you really think I can get to all 612?
Well, when I told my wife what I was going to do, she gave me that look that I'm familiar with.
You're crazy look.
You're not going to do this.
12 days and nearly 800 miles later, Birdie and his wife have visited almost every senior's house, including Lauren Gurley's.
I cried. It's good to know that somebody cares about you.
How's it going?
He gave each senior a card and some candy before taking a selfie.
What was the hope that you would get out of that?
Pretty selfish, because I told him from the jump go, this is really not for y'all. Y'all are handling this fine. And I just want to see you, and I just want you to know I care about you.
This matters.
This matters a lot.
Giving people a sense of hope, letting them know that they're not alone.
Despite the distance, people still care enough to stay connected.
What a great story. Maria Villarreal reporting. This is the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to a special edition of Real Answers with Chris Anderson. We air Wednesdays during the Noon Report and tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed mental health counselor Chris Anderson. And Chris, it's been a little while amidst a worldwide pandemic going on.
You're right. It has been a while. And I'll tell you what, I think we're all still spinning from this, trying to figure out what's going on and if we're going to get back to what we're a little bit more familiar with, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, you and I were able to catch up this past week, and when we were talking, you mentioned your concerns with the term new normal. We're hearing this all over the place now.
Yeah.
Can you explain this?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea when we call this a new normal, that we're experiencing some sort of like a permanent shift here. I mean, that term implies that, again, we just have to get used to living in this state of pause where businesses are going to remain closed, particularly small businesses. And the reality is we got to look at how we're going to be moving forward through all of this. And while I realize we may need to take extra precautions as we approach flu and cold season in the future, I don't think there's anyone that says that staying locked up in our homes, keeping our businesses closed is somehow any sort of a beneficial state on many levels, that's for sure. And I think it's in people's best interest to view this realistically. It's a temporary situation that will have some future ramifications. But, you know, I think folks on both sides of the political aisle don't want to see this continue as any sort of a normal.
What kind of impact is this having on people in your work as a counselor?
You know, Brandon, I do a lot of work with college students, as you know, and they've been impacted quite a bit in terms of having to shift entirely to an online learning platform. Particularly this year's high school and college graduates, they've either had to postpone their graduation ceremonies or even move them online. We've seen that, I know, with Houghton College had an online ceremony, as had some of these other colleges here locally. But, you know, I've had some seniors tell me that they were disappointed that they couldn't engage. And some of the more cherished, we'll call them springtime activities that seniors often participate in, such as senior weeks or spring weekends, that are normally full of outdoor activities or games, that almost like a pre-graduation celebration for folks who've made it to the end in their college years. But, you know, overall, Brandon, there's been mixed reactions in my experience in working with people as a counselor from different perspectives that has allowed them to weather the storm constructively. Others, unfortunately, have focused much more on the lockdown circumstances and are having difficulty not looking at it as that new normal, which I, again, want people to try to stay away from using that term. But, you know, in most cases, during my conversations with clients, there's been some sort of an element in the conversation recently here, obviously, since all this started, that has, in an attempt to try to get them to look at it constructively, and especially when possible, but how are they including God during this time? Are they using this time constructively and increasing their faith?
Let's expand a bit more on that positive attitude, because I think that's just so important. So how can this situation help us to become more resilient?
You know, as we look back over the past several generations, you and I were talking about the greatest generation. That's a term that has been used for our grandparents or now in many cases great-grandparents' generations. So the reality is, why that term? What's this greatest generation term all about? And I think it's at least partly because of the resilience that that generation had in them. My grandparents were born at the tail end of World War I, endured the difficulties of the Great Depression, and then, of course, World War II came along, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, not to mention the constant threat of nuclear engagements between the United States and the Soviet Union during the Cold War were at their peak during the 70s and 80s. But yet, that generation was very resilient. Resilient meaning they can withstand challenges and trials. So they were also a generation that had a very strong faith in God. So the following generation, the baby boom generation, during that generation, we saw a significant reduction in people's faith in God. We saw the rise of what we're seeing today, which is a demanding of our right to define our own reality, our own truth on a number of levels. And of course, this has led to a significant reduction in our ability to be resilient and come out stronger during times of trials and testing. So I think the lesson to be learned in all this, first and foremost, is to look at our own lives, repent of sin where needed, allow God to be on the throne of our lives once again. And then, as the Bible teaches, we need to allow trials and testing to refine our faith, make us stronger during this time. And once again, we need to place value, again, on learning history accurately, historical fact reporting, and instruction in our history classes once again as well. And we need to resolve not to allow idolatry to return, whereas I believe this COVID lockdown has caused us to see the idols as a whole in our society.
You've been listening to a special edition of Real Answers with Chris Anderson. Wednesdays during the Noon Report, we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with Christian counselor Chris Anderson.
All right, I love the way that guy thinks. Thank you very much for that, Brandon. Real Answers comes your way during the Noon Report, or you can listen online anytime. Download a free podcast today at fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. What a difference a day makes. We'll see plenty of sunshine as we move through this afternoon. Temperatures significantly warmer than they were 24 hours ago. A little bit of a breeze this afternoon, but nothing that will be too strong. We'll have clear skies this evening, but clouds will begin to move in from the west later tonight, and that process will continue tomorrow with some rain possible over western portions of Pennsylvania and New York later in the day. The temperatures, though, will continue to turn warmer tomorrow. In fact, temperatures tomorrow night will not drop off much at all with some rain in the area. On Friday, a bit unsettled, some showers and some thunder showers. Some areas will see a bit of sun, especially the southern tier in Pennsylvania, and temperatures will continue to turn warmer with some spots on Friday, perhaps reaching or even exceeding the 70-degree mark.
We'll take it. Thank you, Ken. Finally at noon, need a haircut? Well, don't we all? It's why I wear a ball cap these days. If your hair is getting a little out of control, Johnson City, New York hair stylist says there are some do's and don'ts when it comes to do-it-yourself haircuts, the boat we're all in these days. Amanda Engel tells WBNG-TV out of Binghamton, never pull the hair up when trimming, keep it straight down. I never knew that. That's some great advice there. She also advises use shears instead of kitchen scissors when cutting your hair. Now you know. That's the world we live in. Wednesday, May 13th. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.